Victorian Periodical Parade.
Okay, here we are back again. So today we're on the next installment of the newspaper series, The London Journal. As you know, if you've been watching, we are tracking the nonfiction articles that go along with the novel Lady Audley's Secrets. So now we're on the April 18th segment. This is chapters 10 through 13. So, and you can see, if you have been following along, you remember that they're always talking about the royal wedding. Well, here we finally got a really pretty illustration of the So, just in case you were wondering what the Princess of Wales's wedding jewelry looked like in 1863, now you know. And knowing is half the battle. I've noticed already some changes in this issue, what they used to call, even in just the previous issue, gems of knowledge, which is just little miscellaneous things. They're now calling things worth knowing, which is the title of this video, because I thought that was an interesting shift. Okay, so let's see. There's an article called Honoring Parents, and I did notice in this section of the novel that Robert Audley is wondering how to care for George Talboys's son, who now is completely orphaned, except for his grandfather. As a stranger went into the churchyard of a pretty village, he beheld three children at a newly made grave. A boy about 10 years of age was busily engaged in placing plats of turf about it, while a girl who appeared a year or two younger held in her apron a few roots of wildflowers. The third child, still younger, was sitting on the grass, watching with thoughtful look at the movement of the other two. They wore pieces of crepe, that's indicative of being in mourning for somebody who's dead, on their straw hats and a few other signs of mourning, such as are sometimes worn by the poor, who struggle between their poverty and their affections. So I'm already noticing as I'm looking at this, there's starting to be fewer novels, or at least they're adding more nonfiction. A month earlier in their publications, it was hard to find any nonfiction. It was really, really fiction heavy in this magazine. And I don't know if maybe they're getting a little bit more popular with the upper middle class or what, but they're starting to have more nonfiction here. So whoever's writing this is talking to the children, and then it said, "Never forget the dear parents who loved and cherished you in your infant days. Ever remember their parental kindness. Honor their memory by doing those things which you know would please them when alive, by a particular regard to their dying commands and carrying on their plans of usefulness. Are your parents spared to you? Ever treat them as you will wish you had done when you stand a lonely orphan at their graves. How will a remembrance of kind, affectionate conduct towards these departed friends then help to soothe your grief and heal your wounded heart?" So that's just like a little, I guess, op-ed sort of thing in there. Then there's another thing called the Volunteers of Liverpool. "The beautiful silver ornament presented to the late mayor of Liverpool, Mr. Robert Hutchison, by the Volunteers," that's capitalized, "as a tribute of gratitude, respect, and esteem for the interest he took in their patriotic movement, was manufactured by Mr. Mayor Lord Street, Liverpool. It formed the principal ornament of the table at the sumptuous luncheon given by the late mayor to a select party, consisting chiefly of volunteer officers at the Adelphi Hotel on the occasion of the royal wedding." We're very obsessed with this royal wedding. And then they describe for a long time exactly what this silver dish looked like at the luncheon. So this is kind of like, I mean, we would call it the society pages. This is sort of how people kept up with what the important people were doing at any given time. Okay, so then we're at the science part again. This is weird. It's about how to make steam. Listen to this. "A pint of water may be evaporated by 2 ounces of coals. In its evaporation, it swells into 216 gallons of steam with a mechanical force sufficient to raise a weight of 37 tons a foot high. The steam thus produced has a pressure equal to that of common atmospheric air, and by allowing it to expand by virtue of its elasticity, a further mechanical force may be obtained at least equal in amount to the former." So they're talking about steam power. Like, if you guys remember the steampunk movement that was kind of popular about 5-7 years ago, of course, like, steam power was important to the Industrial Revolution, so I guess they're just trying to inform their readership of that. "New material for paper. Mr. James R. McGill Patrick of Fort Wayne, U.S., has used some of the fibrous material obtained from the boles of the sycamore tree, which he thinks will answer well for making paper. Kind of boring. New scarlet dye. A new scarlet dye of great richness is attracting considerable attention in Canada. It is prepared from an insect, a species of coccus. Let me see what that is. Insect. Oh, scale insects. Yeah, scale insects are something I was just learning about when I've been reading about the wandering in the desert and eating manna in the Bible. And so I went down a rabbit hole researching manna. And some people think manna is like a product of a scale insect, which is the first time I've heard of that kind of insect. It's the same thing here. This new dye closely resembles true cochineal, a most expensive coloring matter capable of being produced in warm countries only. So yeah, actually, I don't know if you guys know this, but until Victoria got married in 1840, white was not used for weddings. In fact, like, colored dyes were very expensive, as they've alluded to here. And so nobody would have been caught dead getting married in white because that meant you couldn't afford dye. But Queen Victoria could do it because everybody knew, as the queen, she had enough money for dyes. And so she made this huge statement by going all in white for her wedding. Just as it would have been as dramatic as seeing somebody in like scarlet, red, or black for their wedding today. Like, it was such a statement. And then white became like what people wore for their weddings. But before that, you would have done like your fanciest dye colored dress that you could afford. Oh my gosh, there's a long little piece about soldering like two pieces of metal together. And then we have something about the water of the Thames River in London. And they were really, in this mid-century period, very interested in like the cleanliness of the Thames water. They had a microscope that it was often quite contaminated. The principal facts indicated by an examination of the water of the Thames during the years 1861 and 1862 are thus described by Dr. Letheby. First, that the water in the middle of the river is invariably charged with a larger portion of dissolved matter than that near the shore, but the quantity of suspended matter is greatest in the shore water. Second, that the proportion of saline matter in the water is greatly influenced by the rainfall and by the temperature of the river. And when the former is less than 2 inches in the month and the latter is over 60 degrees Fahrenheit, the quantity of salic matter quickly rises from the normal portion. Oh my gosh, this is really dry. They go on like this for a while, like the grams per this. It says the quality of the water has been gradually improving. The Death Leap, a narrative of the Arlingham Hunt. They're talking about like a fox hunt, I believe, and like a horse jumping over. Yeah, it's like a woman. Okay, so like there's a hunt and there was a jump and this woman's horse fell to its side with her on it after the jump. And the next horse jumped and like landed with its feet on her chest, so she died. Miss Carrington is her name. In a minute more, a crowd of sympathizing friends had surrounded the living and the dead. Poor couple seemed, I guess that's the guy that I think that was the man that they were a couple. I don't know if they were engaged or what, but his horse accidentally killed her. Whew, the guilt. Poor Coppolis seemed almost unconscious of what he had done. He kept frantically calling upon the dead girl to speak to him, but at last he appeared to recollect himself and at a glance read the full extent of his misery. Gently, he let the corpse down and then, quick as lightning, drew a small pistol from his pocket, cocked it, and touching the roof of his mouth with the muzzle, pulled the trigger and before anybody could save him, fell lifeless across the body of the girl he loved. Oh my God, that took a turn I did not anticipate. Whoa. Okay, well, I can see some connections there to Lady Audley, right? Like, we have George Talboys is so distressed about Helen Talboys's departure, and like George doesn't know if he's like thrown himself in the river. I can see the connection there. Like I've said, they try to anticipate what the readers will want and give them either like more information or more of the same. And this is like a true narrative of, you know, another man beside himself with grief. Wow, I really didn't anticipate it going that way. The green Carlia called fairy rings, which is like, if you've ever seen like mushrooms growing in a circle, it's called a fairy ring. In the Philosophical Transaction, these dark green circles of grass are ascribed to lightning. This phenomenon has also been attributed to ants and again to a small fungus called the fairy ring. But explain these dark green circles as you will, a claim will always linger around them from their superstition that there the moonlit fairies trip their merry roundelays. And so the thought is that if you cross into them, you'll disappear into the fairy realm. So you can kind of get a connection there too, because Hellboys has just disappeared. So they're kind of dropping in little information about like different ways people disappear or go beside themselves for love of a woman and kill themselves. Then we have Lady Audley's Secret, Things Worth Knowing. There's a little article on April Fool's jokes. A hint to engaged ladies. When once a woman has accepted an offer of marriage, all she has or expects to have becomes virtually the property of the man thus accepted as a husband. And no gift or deed executed by her between and the marriage is held to be valid. Okay, if you have been in my classes, you know that I'm always saying that a woman legally ceases to exist in Victorian England once she gets married. And I know it probably seems so outrageous that you think I'm exaggerating, but like, this is in a newspaper, they're not being facetious. Like literally, even once you're engaged, you can't execute deeds or transfer property because you're technically already somebody else's property. Temple Bar, which is where like lawyers worked, and that's Robert Audley is a lawyer, remember? So, and he lives in Temple Bar, I believe. So that's one reason they're including this. The ancient gateway called Temple Bar was built by Christopher Wren after the Great Fire of London in 1666. It is built of Portland stone and of the Corinthian order. The figures over the gateway on the eastern side represent Queen Elizabeth and James I with the royal arms over the keystone. On the west side are represented Charles I and II in Roman habits. Again, this would be like if you were just like Wikipediaing, like what is the Temple Bar? I'm not really familiar because I don't live in London. That's why they're including it, because obviously they didn't have Wikipedia. So if it seems a little odd that they have these like quick little things randomly about explaining this building, that's why, because their readership they know is reading about the Temple Bar and might just want a quick recap on what it looks like or what it even is. And some of the things, you know, of course not everything in here is connected to the novels, but some of the things that may not be connected to our novel may be connected to the two or three other novels that are also in these editions as the reader would be reading Lady Audley's Secret. I'm looking at a really odd one. Yeah, there's so much more nonfiction now. There's a big long article about Prussian Poland. And that kind of makes sense because George and Robert had gone to Eastern Europe a couple of chapters ago. And people, you know, your average Englander probably would never be able to afford to do that. And so they have this whole issue about like what it looks like over there, what people are like. And there's another little article I don't think I should read today, but it's called The Evil and Good We Do Lives After Us. And I think you can see some connection to the ominous things happening in Lady Audley's Secret. And as Robert Audley goes on, I don't think this has happened yet, but he'll start really wondering if he's actually doing good by trying to find George, like if he should leave well enough alone. And he thinks about the sort of butterfly effect of everything we do. So I'm going to try to make a mental note to read this little snippet next time. It's not super long, but we've already gone over time this time. So hopefully I'll read that next time because it's kind of a little foreshadowing for where the novel will go next time. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
And so there, we shall leave it for today. Continue to follow us at Victorian Parade on Twitter, /Victorian Parade on Facebook, and Victorian Periodical Parade on YouTube. Yeah, if you enjoyed this reading, give us a like and hit the bell. Now you can subscribe and then get notifications when we go live. And we'll just have a great time. So, have a good week. See you next time.
Background music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incomputech.com, such as Circus of Freaks, Darkling, Night Vigil. Morgana Rides. Magic Escape Room. Space Jazz. Foxtail Waltz. Starting Out Waltz Allegretto. Among others.
Victorian Periodical Parade.